Good morning, everyone. I'm Stephen Flanagan, the holder of the Henry A. Kissinger Chair here at CSIS, and on behalf of Dr. Hamry, who unexpectedly was unable to join us this morning, I'd like to welcome all of you and welcome our panelists and the presenters to this session, the opening discussion of the new CSIS Center for Strategic Research report on U.S.-Turkish relations, a review at the beginning of the third decade of the post-Cold War era. This is a long in development by my colleagues Bulent Alireza and his collaborator Bulent Alireza. Of course, as you, those of you familiar with CSIS know, is a longtime director of our Turkey project here at CSIS, and collaborating also with Bulent Arash, the director of the Center for Strategic Research at the Turkish Ministry of Foreign Affairs, known by its Turkish acronym SAM, the Center for Strategic Research. This is an event that one of a number that we've had the pleasure, of course, of hosting on Turkey since the CSIS Turkey project was established in 1995. My colleagues and I are very proud of the work that has been done here on Turkey, and very much value our cooperation with the Turkish Ministry of Foreign Affairs, as well as the embassy here in Washington, and we're delighted that Ambassador Namık Tan will be part of our discussion this morning. The alliance between Turkey and the United States, of course, goes back to the Cold War. It arose from mutual strategic needs. With the end of the Cold War came a new global order, and in this context, Washington and Ankara have had to forge a new relationship, unlike many in any of the elements of the bilateral alliance of the Cold War period. This is, and unlike many of those, it has survived and thrived. The United States and Turkey are enjoying a new cooperative era in this relationship. New opportunities and challenges have arisen for the two allies, particularly in Turkey's immediate neighborhood. The United States and Turkey are working closely together to confront a number of key issues: the Arab Awakening, the escalating crisis in Syria, and continuing uncertainties in the Afghanistan-Pakistan region are just some of the important issues which the two countries, the two governments, are dealing with. And it's certainly been long my conviction that our relationship with Turkey is vital. Many of us here at CSIS very much share that view. And contributing to the strengthening of that relationship is one of our key goals and one of our major efforts in the analytic work that we do here and some of the convening and dialogue that we try to sponsor here at CSIS. This report is unique because the CSIS Turkey Project and the Center for Strategic Research have incorporated perspectives from both sides on the enduring relationship between Washington and Ankara. And I want to take this opportunity now to turn thank Dr. Bulent Alireza, director of our Turkey project, and Dr. Bulent Aras for their hard work. I also would like to thank our friend Ambassador Tan for supporting this project from the very beginning, and we very much hope to follow up on this report with an even closer relationship in the future. So now let me turn the floor over to Ambassador Tan for a few words, and let me also recognize one of our CSIS counselors here, who is, we're very happy to join us, and Brent Scowcroft, and we're delighted that he could be part of this discussion this morning as well. So, Ambassador Tan.
Thank you, Dr. Flanagan. Your vision is making a strong contribution, not only to CSIS, but to the study of international relations. But before starting my words, let me just wish well to Dr. Hamry. I think he's had a problem this morning. And I hope he's going to join us and recognize General Scowcroft, who's been a great leader, a wise man, and we have been inspired by his vision. Thank you, sir, for being with us this morning. And during the days of decades-long days of Cold War, Turkey was primarily known for her military strategic contribution to NATO in defense of freedom. Now, Turkey is increasingly known not only for her economic dynamism and secular democracy, but also as an increasingly influential player within the surrounding region. These dynamics, together with the unique historical, cultural, and geographical characteristics of Turkey, enable us to contribute to the quest of lasting peace and stability in our part of the world. Turkish diplomacy has become an active force in projecting peace and stability in a wider geography spanning the Balkans, the Middle East, the Caucasus, Africa, and Asia. It is in this wider context that the relationship between Turkey and the United States is of vital importance. Over the decades, the Turkish-American alliance has outgrown the limits of a political and military alliance, evolving into a partnership that comprises not only political, but also economic, cultural, and social spheres. When we meet with our U.S. counterparts, there is hardly a foreign policy issue that is important only for one side and not the other. That makes our alliance a crucial factor for regional and international peace, security, and stability. In the age of information, portraying a more accurate picture of Turkish-American relations is a priority for both parties. This picture needs to cover the past, the present, and the future of the partnership. I believe this report provides the essential and much-needed backdrop and analysis that one needs to have to understand the ever-evolving and intensifying Turkish-American alliance. This study is also important as it is a unique collaborative effort between CSIS and Center for Strategic Research, SAM, for both distinguished and leading members of think tank world. I'm delighted to note that we have long cooperated with CSIS to further develop closer U.S.-Turkish relations. As part of this relationship, CSIS has hosted Prime Minister Erdogan and Foreign Minister Davutoğlu many times, and this joint report is a product of discussion in one of the meetings here with our foreign minister. This joint report on U.S.-Turkish relations is the first of its kind. It looks back at the origins and history of our alliance with the United States. More importantly, it looks ahead to how we can cooperate even more closely in a number of areas of common interest in the future. I would like to take this opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, to thank the CSIS Turkey Project and Dr. Bülent Aliriza and SAM and Professor Bülent Aras for their insightful work. Hopefully, this is just the beginning of an important partnership, and thank you.
Turn to Bülent Aliriza to begin the discussion of the program.
Thanks, Steve. John Scowcroft, who's to my right, who's kind enough to join us today, actually made time to participate in one of our key working meetings, and I would like to acknowledge all his support and also be grateful if you can say a few words about the relationship, if you may, General.
Well, I don't claim to be a expert on U.S.-Turkish relations, but I was chairman of the American-Turkish Council for 9 years, and I feel very deeply about this relationship and its strengthening and deepening. I think that Turkey is a very unusual country in a very unusual position, and that we are natural allies and friends. We have, as Ambassador says, we have strengthened our relationship considerably from the early days of the Cold War, when we were close military allies, but we had very little else in common. And now we have moved much beyond that, and we are deepening and strengthening that relationship. And we're very different people, and we have to work hard to understand each other and to develop the closeness that will benefit both sides. So I'm delighted to see CSIS doing this work. And Dr. Alarisa, I think, has done a fantastic job, and I'm happy to have been a part of it.
Thank you, sir. And thank you also, Mr. Ambassador. Let me thank you, Mr. Ambassador, and your colleagues at the embassy, as well as at the foreign ministry, especially Yolanda Ras to my left, and all his colleagues at the Center for Strategic Research, SAM, who are our partners in this project. I also want to thank all the past and present members of the CSIS Turkey Project team for all the great work they did. And you know, you have the report, but you don't see all the great work that people here at CSIS and at SAM did, and I'd like to acknowledge all their support. I would also like to acknowledge the support of current and former U.S. policymakers and diplomats who generously shared their views with us on the past, present, and future of U.S.-Turkish relations. In particular, General Scowcroft, who, as I said, made time to join us at our working group meetings. However, while their contributions, both Turkish and Americans, past and present members of the administrations, were important to us, the report ultimately reflects the views of the CSIS Turkey Project and SAM, which, as the ambassador underlined, is a part of the think tank world, as well as of the Turkish Foreign Ministry, and not necessarily that of official Washington or official Ankara. As we note in our report, they will be made available to you as soon as the meeting is over, the U.S. and Turkey have just entered the third decade following the end of the Cold War. And we decided to underline this symbolic threshold because the alliance has its roots in the Cold War, even though the diplomatic relationship precedes the establishment of the alliance after the Second World War, and continued to be based on Cold War interests until the end of the Cold War, brought on by the collapse of the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact. The alliance then demonstrated its resilience and adaptability, as well as its indispensable nature for the two countries, by continuing into the uncharted waters of the post-Cold War era. As the new decade of the alliance begins to unfold, Washington and Ankara are cooperating closely, especially because of their overlapping perspectives currently, relating to the transformation in the Middle East, as well as in a number of regional and functional areas. However, as we also note in our report, the history of the relationship shows that the two countries have had to deal with problems as they sought to consolidate their relationship, and it remains to be seen how the two countries will respond to them in the future. We look ahead in the report at how the partnership may evolve by focusing on the main areas of cooperation, such as, of course, the close coordination between the U.S. and Turkey during the Arab Spring, the NATO mission in Afghanistan, the U.S.-led NATO missile shield program that Turkey is cooperating in, and, of course, military efforts against the PKK. However, significant points of divergence in their perspectives as well as policies remain. Unlike during the Cold War period, when each side knew what it could give and what it could expect to receive in the relationship, the two sides often fall short of the expectations of the other, but significantly have not allowed those to undermine their cooperation. The unfolding of a number of specific issues will help shape the future of the alliance. These include the trajectory of the Arab Spring, and that's uncertain, the threat posed by the Syrian crisis through the region-wide transformation towards democracy, which is very serious, the Iranian nuclear program, and we don't know how that's going to turn out, continuing turmoil in Iraq with its various dimensions, the Israeli-Palestinian dispute with its almost infinite number of dimensions, and uncertainty in the AFPAC region, and the Balkans, which is quite often forgotten in the debate, as well as Russia's role in the Caucasus and Central Asia. As we conclude in our report, the evolving partnership between the U.S. and Turkey has the potential for improvement as well as deterioration. Consequently, while responding to future developments, Washington and Ankara constantly need to bear in mind that the alignment of their interests in security, stability, and democratization require them to work in tandem as much as possible. And with that, I call on Dr. Bülent Arar's partners in this project in Ankara to say a few words.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Bülent. And also thank you, Mr. Flanagan, dear Ambassador, and Mr. General. I also like to thank to those who have been who are here to listen us and who like to share the report with us. As Dr. Ali Riza mentioned, this is a project of a year, and we have succeeded to produce a report. And we will see whether you like it or not. We already liked it. We are discussing among each other. There is a well-known Turkish poet, Nazım Hikmet, and once he asks another recognized Turkish painter, and he asks him to paint him the picture of happiness. And for a think tanker, I think the picture of happiness is to have this kind of report, and these kind of things make think tankers happy in this world. We feel excited. So much has been said on how we produce the report. And Dr. Ali Riza also mentioned a little bit about the report. I'll continue from where he left, and I'll just underline few of our findings in the report. And I think this may also help to have a kind of discussion after this introduction session. There has been always a factor in Turkish-American relations. I call this the relevant issue or third country factor. There has been always some issues and some other countries that Turkish-American relations occurred on it. This has been sometime Iraq. This has been sometime energy issue. Well, in this report, we covered, a good deal of these third country factor and relevant issues. But also we have discovered that, the bilateral, the relations at the bilateral level, that is also gaining some solid concrete base. And this has been, I guess, best formulated by President Obama. He suggested model partnership. And what we just, recognize is there is a shift from the relation occurring, in relation to relevant issues and third country factors to the mutual relations. This is something new and gaining prospects for the future of the relations. Another finding of us is to discover the multidimensional nature of Turkish-American relations. Turkish-American relations occur at various levels, at the regional level, and this is at the various regions, and also this occurs in international level. And to some extent, the relations are important in terms of domestic countries of these two countries. Time to time, and this this multidimensional character is important if you like to follow the relations in the coming years. Dr. Ali Riza mentioned about the expectation gap. Well, we had a discussion on the expectation gap using several issues at stake between the countries, and it seems to me, well, the countries are doing better in terms of dealing with this expectation gap. There is more mutual understanding than both countries had the earlier decades. Now the countries recognize their priorities, their capabilities, as well as their limits better than the earlier decades. One interesting thing, if you read the report, you'll also recognize ins and outs in Turkish-American relations. Well, Syria is certainly an important issue. Iraq is not that much important. This shows us the dynamism of the relations between two countries. There are always, you know, the issues of great importance, and those may change place time to time. Well, the relations, Turkish-American relations, occur in the third decade of Cold War era, occur on a rationalist calculation in both sides. This is, you know, simply a cost-benefit analysis based on overlapping or conflict of interest. But however, the idea of alliance still matters. Both countries pay attention to preserve the alliance. Well, there are new issues, new challenges. The whole world is changing. Two countries are also changing. Turkey has a new foreign policy framework. The United States has a new administration, which has been renewed after the elections. Well, one may conclude, this United States as a hegemonic power, which is, you know, far from the continental center of the globe. Turkey, which is at the center of Africa, Asia, and Europe, and Europe, at the epicenter of Afro-Eurasian continents. The relations between these two countries, hegemonic center, and another country which is at the center of the almost all conflicts, all raising issues, is a very interesting one to observe, both academically and at the policy level. We suppose this report will kind of help us to understand the current dynamics and will give us some idea to understand the future. Last, I'd like to quote the famous philosopher Karl Marx. Among others, he is also a master in philosophy of history. And I like his notion that, you know, we all try to determine our future, but we are trying to do this on the conditions that we cannot control. I think the situation is valid for Turkish-American relations. But again, as I said, it is, you know, it's a valuable topic to follow. And we had the excitement shared with our partner, CSIS. And we'll continue to bring with these kind of reports to you. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Ross and Dr. Alireza, for giving us some overview of the main findings of the report. But we have a number of members of the audience with long experience in U.S.-Turkish relations and other aspects of U.S. foreign policy. So we have about an hour allowed for discussion, and I look forward to comments and questions. I wonder, just to kick it off a bit, if we could draw you, both of our co-authors, out a little bit more on how you see handling the different approaches that the U.S. and Turkey have taken vis-a-vis Iran, beginning with Syria and its support for strong support for the Assad regime, but also on the nuclear question. How does your report discuss efforts as Turkey seeks to continue to avoid a more confrontational relationship with Iran, which has, of course, become increasingly difficult in the context of current Iranian behavior, both in dealing with the Arab awakening, but also in of course, continuing to provide critical support to the Assad regime. But also on the nuclear question, Turkey has made some gestures in recent years, particularly accepting the deployment of the missile defense radar, to suggest a more hard-headed approach to Iran. But still, there's great discussion about expanding trade and economic cooperation. So I wondered how you see that as an area of, and particularly as the Obama administration undertakes its policy reviews, looking towards the Iranian relationship, how do you think the U.S. and Turkey can best manage differing approaches that they have on dealing with the Iranian challenge, the number of challenges that Iran poses.
You know, I will be dealing with the complications, the Iranian complications in the U.S.-Turkish relationship, but I think it's best if Dr. Aras goes first, not least because Sam, unlike those of us in Washington, has maintained a dialogue with its Iranian counterparts. And, I mean, he'll go first on the Turkish-Iranian relationship, and then I'll follow.
Well, Turkey played a mediator role and continues to play a mediator role between international community and Iran on nuclear issue. And this is still a valid role despite all those, you know, problems these two countries are facing vis-a-vis the Arab Spring. Turkey is still a trusted party in terms of dealing with Iranian nuclear issue. Well, I think that this issue should be discussed in at two levels. One is Turkey's attempt to bridge the gap between, you know, international community and Iran on the nuclear issue, which is, you know, kind of very much serving to Turkey's own interests, since Turkey doesn't want, you know, and, you know, external involvement to Iran, which will be disastrous for Turkish interests and to the whole area. And from Turkish perspective, is the best way is to handle the question through the means of diplomacy and the work until the last, you know, until the last moment. On the other hand, Turkish-Iranian relation has its own dynamics. While Turkey let the missiles to be deployed in its eastern territory, since Turkey has a threat perception, and this is this missile defense system serves for Turkey's own security needs, and Turkey is a part of NATO defense framework. Well, while saying that, also, you know, one needs to, you know, understand Turkey's position to keep this NATO defense shield as a defensive mechanism. What Turkey has done in 2010 in Estonia, Turkey, you know, made it clear that it will oppose to name any country, you know, as an enemy of NATO. Turkey just made it sure that, you know, this whole missile system will be considered as a defensive one if they want Turkey's inclusion. That means, you know, the Turkish-Iranian relation is much more complicated than actually it seems. There are, you know, overlapped interests. There are, you know, conflicting interests. And Turkey and Iran, I always use the analogy of, you know, if you look at the European history, it's like the France and Germany, and this is, you know, if you think this analogy, these are two powerful states in the country, and the relations have its own bilateral dynamics, regional dynamics, and as well as international dynamics. If one refers to this nuclear issue.
Yeah, the word I'd use here is I look at the Turkish-Iranian relationship and how it fits into the Turkish-U.S. Relationship is balance. Turkey wants to balance, obviously, its relationship with the United States, which is very interested for all sorts of reasons, beginning with the nuclear issue with Iran and how to deal with Iran, and its desire to continue to trade with Iran, to continue to buy gas from Iran, and to try and work out an understanding as to how to regulate their conflicting interests in the Middle East. And the prime example of that, of course, is Syria. And on the other side, the U.S., while tightening sanctions against Iran, obviously takes into account, as part of its own balance, Turkey's unwillingness, the at the most extreme level to cut off relations with Iran. Obviously, that's not going to happen. And sometimes this balancing act doesn't work. And we saw that in June 2010, when Turkey voted against the U.S.-sponsored sanctions package at the United Nations, notwithstanding an appeal by President Obama at the last minute to Prime Minister Erdogan on the phone. Now, the balancing act is made easier by the fact that that both sides, as Dr. Aras underlined, agree on one thing, which is that neither wants the situation to deteriorate into armed conflict. Bilal Taras just said it would be a disaster, and the Obama administration has made it clear during the past 4 years, and even the Bush administration in the last 2-3 years made it clear that forces indeed, as they said innumerable times, that it's a last resort. Now, if, though, the situation in Syria gets worse, and with Iran being on one side of the worsening conflict and Turkey being on the other, then I'm not sure that Turkey will be able to maintain its balancing act. At least that's my perspective from Washington. And also, the U.S. Having to decide whether to engage more forcefully in the Syrian issue, we'll have to think about what a worsening relations between Iran and Syria might mean. But for the moment, there's a great deal of understanding between Washington and Ankara about not letting Iran and the Iranian nuclear issue affect their relationship in a negative way, and so far they've been successful.
Could I just press you on that, though, both of you? I mean, the whole question of the level, the trust that Professor Aras alluded to, I mean, it seems to me is gone, that certainly there can't be any confidence in Ankara anymore about Iranian behavior and in terms of the way it has acted with regard to Syria, and even reports that they are perhaps supporting terrorist activities inside Turkey itself. At the same time, certainly Turkey has made clear its position of standing against of Iran in advancing what it sees as a critical strategic interest in Syria and perhaps elsewhere into the Eastern Mediterranean. And so, does this make the Professor Aras? Do you think this makes it easier? Are the U.S. and Turkey likely to come more together on seeing Iran as a real problem in the area, or do you think the Turkish government can still hold on to the hope of some kind of a cooperative relationship with Iran?
Well, I think you posed two questions. One is on Turkish-Iranian relations and how come Turkey is still a trusted actor in nuclear issue while having all those difficulties in the rest. Well, this is typical Iranian behavior. Well, the major problem in Iran, it seems to me, dispersion of power, and there are visible and invisible power centers in Iran. For example, there is these old generals who fought during Iran-Iraq war. Whenever a serious issue comes to fore, they appear, and they then take a very powerful position. This power structure makes Iran to behave differently in different issues. Well, this certain segment of Iranian national security security structure, they trust in Turkey and the nuclear issue, while the other segment is trying everything to undermine what Turkey is doing in Syria. This is how Iranian foreign policy works. And in that way, Turkey is still a trusted actor, and I'm saying this based on the observation that they still prefer Istanbul to conduct nuclear diplomacy, and they use Turkish conduits to deliver their messages to the rest of the world. Well, the second question, well, there seems to me, there is an increasing convergence on Turkish and U.S. positions on Iran. on the issues like the Arab Spring, the Syrian question, maybe not that much in Iraq. But you know, this is if you compare Turkey's position in 2010 and the Turkish position in 2011, I think the Turkish position is more closer to the U.S. position now.
Well, I'm sure the audience now has a number of questions that they'd like to raise, and I didn't mean to preempt, but I just wanted to get you a chance to collect some thoughts. And I'll certainly recognize the two-finger rule. If you want to come in on this particular question of Iran and U.S.-Turkish policy vis-a-vis Iran, we could continue on this line for a while, but we're happy to move out to other issues as well. Any questions? Yes, Barry Jacobs. If you could just please identify yourself, too.
I don't have a question, but I just would like your collective opinions on Turkey's relations with Syria, how it affects the United States, which I believe I'm told is seen in certain circles in Ankara as having encouraged the government to come call for the fall of Assad and then, at least in certain eyes, has not followed through with adequate assistance. So, and also, obviously, this is for all of the talk of no problems with your neighboring countries, it seems to me this is sort of the end. So I'm just curious if you would all, if you wish to comment upon Syria and Turkish relations with Syria and what can come next.
You know, when you look at the report, Barry, you'll see that we focus quite a bit in the third part of the report, which looks ahead on cooperation in the Middle East, dealing with the Arab Spring, and then on how Syria might well threaten this cooperation, because if you look back at the developments since the Tunisian Bouazizi set himself on fire at the end of December 2010, throughout 2011 there was great cooperation between Washington and Ankara. Frequent telephone conversations between President Obama and Prime Minister Erdogan. According to White House logs, I think they spoke at least 18 times during that period. And there seemed to be a progression from Tunisia through Egypt. Libya is somewhat different, and an expectation that democratic change would also occur in Syria. Well, it hasn't. The situation is getting worse. And if Assad survives and the uprising is crushed, you know, that will put a huge question mark over the transformation of the Middle East. Now, as you know, I go frequently to Ankara, and I do hear those comments that Turkey has not been sufficiently supportive, has not been sufficiently supported by the United States. The Prime Minister himself has made comments to that effect to American journalists. And he's obviously eager, now that the elections are out of the way, to get Washington to be more supportive of Ankara as, you know, the number of refugees who go to Turkey increases, as the incidents along the border with Syrian firing across the border increase. Obviously, he would want Washington to be more supportive. It remains to be seen how the policy in Washington will evolve, but certainly, Syria is a huge problem, not just in the region itself for Turkey, which is next door, but also, I would argue, in U.S.-Turkish relations. And they, you know, maybe it's too early to call it a hidden crisis in U.S.-Turkish relations, because I think that would be going too far. But certainly, if the situation continues along the current track, there will be tensions and. And what you characterize as the U.S., to put it crudely, leaving Turkey in the lurch with this crisis, I think will increase. But I'd very much like to hear what my colleague has to say about it from the Ankara perspective.
If you are comparing the U.S. attitude towards Syria and Turkish attitude towards Syria, one difference is Syria is next door to Turkey, and there are other countries that are facing the same crisis, like, you know, the Jordan, Lebanon, Iraq, and others. And you know, we need to focus on the regional framework, that Turkey is the only country which can deal with this challenge. And if the situation continues, what's going to happen to Lebanon and Jordan? And before, you know, thinking Turkey that much, I think we should also think a little bit what's going to happen to Jordan and Lebanon. And, you know, when the number of refugees reaches to 1 million, how Jordan is going to handle it? Turkey, one way or another, can deal with 1-2 million. To 2 million refugees, which will be also very painful for Turkey. But this is, you know, a regional mess, and this is already out of control. And, you know, having said that, what Turkey tries to do is to play a constructive role for, you know, a transformation within Syria. And what Turkey is trying to do is to pursue, you know, each and every means of diplomacy to persuade international community to take a position, to play a more effective role, and to have the regional countries to stay on the constructive side. And also Turkey engages in Syrian opposition to form the possible widest opposition, including all segments of Syrian society. This is what Turkey is trying to do, and this is what Turkey can do indeed. And nobody should wait more than this. But again, as I said, this is the next door crisis, and which will have disastrous effects. And Turkey will continue to deal with the problems with the possible means. And of course, little more help from the United States will be something desired in Turkey. But as I said, you know, as we have discovered in the report, the both sides are more aware of their priorities, their limitations, capabilities. And I don't assume, you know, I a little bit differ from Bülent Alireza's position. I don't assume a major crisis in this respect. But there will be, you know, some tension if that not that much crisis.
Questions on the floor. Ambassador Lino in the back and then over here.
Marisa Lino with Northrop Grumman. I'd like to take this question one step further. Turkey is probably one of the strongest partners of the United States in NATO, and there seems to be very little, if no, interest in NATO in getting involved in the Syria issue. So my question would be, what impact will the spreading crisis in Syria have on NATO and U.S.-Turkey relations within NATO? And do you see the possibility of even minimal NATO involvement, like a no-fly zone, as there was in Iraq, using Turkish bases? And any other thoughts you have on this?
You know, Steve, believe it or not, I'm going to kick this back to you because you visit Brussels, NATO headquarters in Brussels, more than any of us. And, you know, take a crack at it first, and I'll be happy to add to it.
Well, I think this, having just been at some discussions also in Berlin about this issue recently, not in Brussels though, but I was in Brussels over the summer, and there's a lot of hesitation about the demands, the military demands of enforcing even a limited no-fly zone over Syria. I mean, the statistic that I heard repeated in a number of occasions was that. It's a much, you know, obviously it's a much more complicated military environment than Libya was. You have a country that's about one-tenth the size of Libya with 10 times the density of air defense and more modern air defense systems. So it's not a trivial military undertaking, even to undertake the notion that I believe that the Turkish government has sometimes been advocating of establishing a small safe haven in some part of northern Syria, in which both refugees could go and perhaps the Free Syrian Army and other resistance forces could regroup and have some protection. I mean, I think clearly there's no consensus within the alliance now to go down that path, but I think increasingly as they see the concerns that the Turkish government has expressed about the cross-border incidents leading to some kind of an event that could invoke the collective defense commitments of the other NATO countries to Turkey, that perhaps there will be some movement to look at some of these other options. I mean, Prime Minister Erdogan, of course, had said that sort of 100,000 refugees was the red line beyond which Turkey would need outside help. They've certainly crossed that. I don't know whether Ambassador Tan or others want to comment on this. And clearly, some of the cross-border incidents continue between Turkey and Syria. There have been reports that Turkey has requested deployment of Patriot air defense systems to deal with some of this. And there were certainly steps taken after Turkey called for consultations under Article 4 of the North Atlantic Treaty twice this summer, both in June and again in September, to look at the military options. But I think in terms of a robust intervention, certainly there's no support within many NATO governments for that kind of action right now. I don't know quite what would unless the Obama administration came forward with some kind of a plan for something like supporting this kind of a limited sort of no-fly zone and some protection for refugees and in the north, I would find it hard to see other allies coming forward with that. I sense that sometimes that's what the Turkish government is waiting for too. But I'll let others comment on that.
Well, this whole discussion turned into a kind of different shape. Actually, we were supposed to go through this report, but now it's been kind of a panel discussion. But I need to say a few words on the Syria issue. First, there are certain facts that we should not just overlook. One of them is this is not a question between Turkey and Syria. This is a adjacent country to us. Of course, everything is going on just right next to us. People are being tortured, murdered, massacred each and every day in tens and thousands. So people seem to look at us as a sort of a country that would just take care of this whole question by ourselves. I think this is not fair. This is an issue, this is a problem between Syria and the international community. Because the civilians are being killed in that country. They are being massacred. They are being bombed each and every day. And nobody is taking a moment and just placing themselves, you know, physically, virtually, of course, in the place of Turkish citizens who are living right next to the border. Even as late as yesterday, ladies and gentlemen, the Syrian regime was bombing its own people in 30 meters, I mean 300 meters to the Turkish border, which are almost, right next to the Turkish towns. And I think 12 people were killed. So I don't know the international community, what they are waiting for. Are they waiting for a Srebrenica moment to come? And then they will take an action? This is not fair. When we ask more leadership from the international community, from UN, people think that we want everyone come and just put their boots and take a military action. This is not the case. This is a huge issue. We have, as of today, 114,000, or how many exactly, I don't know, but around 120,000 people in Turkey being hosted in the best possible way. And no one, quite... I think seriously interested in giving a sort of a helping hand in a proper sense. I'm not just, I wouldn't just, of course, name names, but the huge international community is not there, So I think we would the NATO aspect of it is actually Turkey is a NATO member. Turkey has made enormous sacrifices. If you look at this whole thing and if you scan back the historical background, you'll see it. Turkey stood alone for facing certain critical problems in the past, and we made every single effort, be it in Bosnia, in Afghanistan presently, in Somalia in the past, to give, I think, a strong support to NATO. Of course, as a full NATO member, we would expect NATO to take it more seriously. I mean, I'm not saying that they don't. Don't misunderstand me. But I think, and so far, if you check into the statements coming out of NATO and from all our NATO allies, including the UN, I mean, the NATO Secretary General, we appreciate it. I mean, they were quite clear that NATO will not hesitate a moment, although Steve talked about hesitations, to come to the help of Turkey. So how could this help be structured? This is another matter of discussion, which we are doing now. And the same is true for the United States. We are receiving a lot of support. There is an unprecedented coordination and collaboration between our relevant authorities and competent people, almost daily basis. And we are trying to help to ease the lives of the people who are being massacred every day. And, you know, I should make this call once again. You know, I did talk to several, in several meetings. This is the time. The more this problem gets dragged on, the more complicated it gets. And the more we are hesitant for different reasons to stand united against this regime, the more costly it will become in the future to repel this really ugly attacks against the civilians. This should be taken into consideration as early as possible.
Well, I think we've heard. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, the degree of disappointment that, which is understandable, that Ambassador Tan expresses on this issue, underlines the point I was trying to make that, as we look ahead to the future of this relationship, that Syria and how it's dealt with is going to leave its imprint on it. He was diplomatic enough not to say that that the U.S. is not doing enough, but the Prime Minister himself has said on the record that what's been done by the U.S. is not sufficient. Now, he did also say that that was perhaps due to the elections, but now that the elections are out of the way, what I anticipate is a great deal more pressure from Ankara for Washington to exercise its influence at the United Nations, because you know, Ambassador Lina talked about the Iraq example, but there was a UN resolution then, and there isn't one now, and the Russians and the Chinese have already vetoed three times. So you know, is the U.S. going to put a lot more pressure at the UN to try and get a resolution? If not, will we go down the alternative route, which is action outside the confines of the UN without a resolution, similar to what happened in the Balkans? And that requires the U.S. to make a decision too. And so far, the U.S. has not been willing to make that decision. And again, I mean, just to wrap up on this issue, I think it's impossible to exaggerate the possible impact. I stress possible the possible impact of Syria on U.S.-Turkish cooperation in the Middle East and overall as to the future of the model partnership. All the areas of cooperation that we talked about are important, but there's one crisis which is very urgent, as the ambassador has underlined, that needs to be dealt with in a satisfactory manner by the two countries, hopefully together. And if that's not done, then we have to put a question mark on the relationship. I understand that Dr. Shaban Kardash from Strategic Research Center wants to address this issue too. He's with us, so go ahead, please. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Actually, on the same subject, I mean, your points about possible implications of the Syria crisis for Turkish-American relations are well taken, but we should keep in mind that, especially in the original question, there was an assumption, which is also the gist of the current debate inside Turkey about Turkey's Syria policy, is that Turkey has taken the position it has taken because it expected that America would be forthcoming, or Turkey has taken the position because America pushed it to take this position. If this is the case, the implications would be grave, but I don't think this was the case. Turkey has taken the position it has taken in Syria because of its own calculations, because of the calculations of the government, because of the way they approached the situation. They made it an assessment that the situation in Syria was intolerable, and Turkey, as you would remember, initially was trying to find a middle way between the regime and the opposition, but later departed the regime and asked for openly regime change. So it has taken that position out of its own assessment of the situation. Of course, in that decision, there was some calculation about possible U.S. reaction. The U.S. fell short of it, but at the end of the day, it was its own policy. So I don't think the implications of U.S. Low support to the Syrian opposition will be as damaging to the U.S.-Turkish partnership because of the fact that it was, at the end of the day, Turkish policy, the decision to break off with Assad, the decision to support the opposition, both in political terms by especially forming the Syrian National Council in Turkey, supporting the unification opposition, and also supporting the military opposition. Even there are some reports that in some ways the U.S. Was not satisfied or happy with the way Turkey was supporting the military aspects of the Syrian opposition. Regarding the possible involvement of NATO, I mean, we should also make a distinction between two possible scenarios. One, in which, for instance, if the situation between Turkey and Syria turns into direct military confrontation. So in this case, under Article 5, there would be a solid legal basis for NATO to get involved. And so far, as far as I understand, the NATO partners made clear that they would be there to support Turkey. For instance, 2 or 3 weeks ago, U.S. Deputy Chief of Staff was in Turkey for consultations. And also at NATO, there are consultations in that regard, as far as I understand. But the other case is, as Ambassador Tan greatly put it, is the humanitarian situation in Syria. The question is whether the regional actors and the international community will be there to stop the ongoing situation. So in that regard, it will be up to the international community. It's not just because of Turkey being a member of NATO, but it is because of whether the United States or NATO will decide to do something about the ongoing humanitarian tragedy or not. So in this case, as Dr. Alirza mentioned, the possible example is perhaps the Balkans case, especially Kosovo, without a clear UN Security Council resolution. If the U.S. Decides not to go the UN Security Council route or not, if it fails again to obtain a resolution because of Russian and Chinese NATO. But we should make this distinction between whether NATO will be there to support Turkey militarily under Article 5, Collective Security Self-Defense Commitment, or out of humanitarian considerations. These are two scenarios.
You know, and just to clarify, in case there was some misunderstanding, what I was suggesting is the allies were hesitant about what the kind of intervention, a Kosovo-style ad hoc coalition without a UN mandate to, or, you know, a unified protector without a UN mandate, that is, you know, the Libyan operation without a UN mandate, that is what I think allies are hesitant about. And they know that at this point, at least in time, they can't get a UN Security Council resolution. So unless the U.S. says this is the route we want to go, I can't see other allies pushing that course. But anyway, Sharon Wiener, you wanted to take the floor with a question or a comment.
Sharon Wiener with Koch University and former U.S. Consul General in Istanbul. I would like to have your comments and maybe an idea of what is in your report on the issue of, and this is another balance issue, but how the U.S. should balance its concerns about democratic human rights issues, Turkish domestic issues, with its foreign policy relationship, with its bilateral relationship with Turkey. What role, if any, should this play in U.S. relations with Turkey, and how can U.S. concerns about things like freedom of the press be incorporated into an effective bilateral relationship with Turkey? And again, all of this in the context as everyone is looking back over, you know, previous experience that the U.S. official relationship with countries like Egypt, how that balance was managed in the past with other countries has come under a certain amount of criticism. How does that play into the U.S.-Turkish relationship as we look forward?
I'll take a crack at it first. You're right about the examples of neglect of the domestic situation in the past. The most glaring example is the fact that there were coups which interrupted the democratic process in Turkey in the past in 1960, 71, and 1980 during the Cold War period. And the U.S. Looked the other way, I think would be a wrong way to put it, but, you know, was not sufficiently engaged in the process to weigh in because the overwhelming dictates of you know, Cold War cooperation. Now, Turkey is a different country, obviously. The U.S. has supported, and you were there for part of that process, where it became more democratic and more open. Sure, there are shortcomings that I think ought to be raised between allies quietly. And a failure to do so, I think, is to the detriment of the relationship. Now, I think Egypt is a different case because, you know, we're talking about two allies. And one of the points that we make in the report is that the first democratic elections in 1950 occurred because the U.S., in its effort to bring Turkey into NATO, pressed for genuine free democratic elections. And then that satisfied the requirements for membership of the North Atlantic Alliance. So from the very beginning of the relationship, I mean, the beginning of the alliance, I think, can be traced back to the Truman Doctrine. But the 1950 elections in May 1950, and then the Turkish entry into NATO in 1952, which led to the very close relationship between Turkey and the United States, you know, rooted in a multilateral alliance, but, you know, with a bilateral alliance developing, also had, as a subtext, Turkish interest, was a major subtext, a major interest in Turkish democracy, human rights, and so on. The question, as always, and you've been a member of the U.S. Foreign Service, is how do you raise it with allies, and how do you raise it when you have a whole range of other issues that may be, like Syria, more urgent is the wrong way to put it, but, you know, is right on the front burner. You know, that's something that I think policymakers in Washington and diplomats have to grapple with. And I think the Turks themselves in an open society are discussing these issues, and it's different to earlier periods when you know, Turkey was not discussing it. And I think that it is something that is a legitimate part of the equation. But I'd very much like to hear Bülent Arars's views on this.
Well, actually, I don't think there is much to add to what Dr. Alireza said. You know, when you looked at this U.S. policy with the countries like Turkey, Egypt, I think you should also look at, you know, one perspective is to look at how the United States, you know, deals with these countries in terms of, you know, democratization, human rights improvements. But the other perspective is how these countries are, you know, how they are doing it inside those countries. You know, if you look at Egypt, you know, the crucial issue to, you know, to preserve the alliance with the United States, to preserve the hold on power in country, you know, Hosni Mubarak regime, and use it as a, you know, matter of legitimacy. And the U.S. government was very much happy to have, you know, Hosni Mubarak, a stable government, pursuing, you know, this American interest over there. But this has not been the case in Turkey. Turkey has its own, you know, dynamism of democratization, improvement of human rights, etc. It is not, you know, at the desired level, but Turkey's course has been, you know, in a different way. Turkish-U.S. alliance has always been something to do with Turkey's desire to be in the Western camp, in the Western alliance, and this is, I think, the main difference.
Is there a question in the back?
Alan Makovsky, House Foreign Affairs Committee. I just wanted to ask about a couple of the staples of U.S.-Turkish relations in a very specific way. First of all, Israel. Is it possible to continue for Turkey to continue with good relations with the U.S., bad relations with Israel? Is that a sustainable balance? And I'm really asking that without a bias. I just want to underscore. I'd really like to hear the speculation of the two Bulents on that. And second of all, Cyprus. That really is a staple and has often seemed like a stalemate, but there's now a new dynamic with the Republic of Cyprus's offshore gas explorations being conducted by a U.S. company, actually a U.S.-Israeli consortium, I believe. And that having been a source of discomfort, obviously, to Turkey, threats from Turkey at one point. I'm just wondering, how do you see this issue playing out between the U.S. and Turkey in the year ahead?
You and I have been talking about Cyprus for longer than either of us really want to remember, almost for three decades in Washington. Exactly. Now, is quite clear is that you know, people in the U.S. government who served, you know, who looked at Cyprus before, and those who are looking at it now will deny it. But you know, the U.S. has essentially learned how to manage this issue in a way that, and the congressional factor, of course, ever since the embargo of 1975 imposed by the U.S. Congress because of Cyprus on arms sales to Turkey. To not to allow it to impact U.S.-Turkish relations. The same thing could be said about the Armenian genocide resolution issue. Now, what is interesting is the way, of course, the U.S. would love to see a resolution of this issue, but, you know, there's no shooting war in Cyprus, thank God, and it is not right up there with Syria or with the other issues on the U.S.-Turkish agenda. Now, what is interesting, Alan, is the way in which the energy component of the Cyprus issue is beginning to blend into the Turkish-Israeli tensions because the same company is looking for oil and gas off the coast, both in Israel, and that is parallel to the cooperation between the Greek Cypriot government and the Israelis that's been developing. Perhaps because of Israeli peak at Turkish policies, or because the Greek Cypriot desire to enhance their own stature vis-à-vis Turkey, but nonetheless, the two issues, interestingly, are blending into each other. Now, on Israel, what you see in Washington is the kind of compartmentalization that we can talk about with respect to Cyprus. Yes, it's there, and the U.S. would love to solve it, but it does not allow the U.S.-Turkish relationship to suffer because of it. Same thing on Israel. You know, the U.S. would love to see a better relationship between Ankara and Tel Aviv, but nonetheless, it has not allowed it to affect the relationship so far. Now, there are certain expectations on the Turkish side, which is something that Dr. Aras talked about, including, you know, greater efforts to solve the Israeli-Palestinian issue, talking to Hamas, you know, which is something that's hitherto been unthinkable for Washington. Putting greater pressure on Israel, on the settlements issue, and so on. Imagine a Syrian scenario, just for the sake of hypothesis, of an Israeli strike on Iran. The U.S. reaction and the Turkish reaction may well be different, will be different, I would argue. If the current shelling between Israel and Gaza on the Hamas control gets worse, again, this issue comes right into the U.S.-Turkish relationship in a way that the president and the prime minister have so far essentially compartmentalize. But, you know, how long can this be sustained? I think you asked the right question. How long can this be sustained? There's also a congressional factor. You know, at some stage. Well, so far it's been sustained. Yeah. But, you know, at some stage, the expectations on the Ankara side will not match the reality as to what I would argue that Washington will be able to deliver. And then the Israeli issue comes out. And one more thing. I mean, nobody knows this better than you because you work up there. The Armenian Genocide Resolution issue was defeated in the past because the Friends of Israel on Capitol Hill opposed it. Now, if because of the difficult relationship between Turkey and Israel, the Friends of Israel decide to sit on their hands or even to vote against it, then this becomes an issue immediately in the U.S.-Turkish relationship.
Can I just ask a
That is my understanding, but I would very much like to hear Bilan Taras on this.
John has to leave at this point. I just wanted to, anyway.
If I could just take my leave.
Sure.
And thank you.
Did you want
to? Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Dr. Russ, sir.
Well, when one looks at the Turkish-Israeli relations, I think there are limits of, you know, the relations, you know, getting worse getting better. There are, you know, upper and lower limits, and what we are facing is a new law. We had similar kind of situations in the past. And, you know, if you look at all the past low level of relations, any development in the Palestinian front very much helped to improvement of the relations. I think it is the same as valid. And in that sense, I share, you know, Bülent Alirza's general perspective about, you know, any U.S. help for the any kind of improvement in the Palestinian front will be very much helpful. But, you know, considering the regional situation, Arab Spring, and Turkish, the widespread Turkish-American, you know, overlapping interest, the current situation is very, very much sustainable for a considerable period of time. Turkey can have good relations with the United States without having good relations with Israel. And, you know, if you look at what's happening in Egypt, what's going to happen in Syria, and what will be followed in Jordan, and you'll see, you know, there will be Israel is losing the whole region, and you know, those will be taking very critical positions against Israel. There are also signs that, you know, there may be change within Israel. We'll see. You know, considering all those factors, and Turkey will certainly wait for an apology and, you know, a kind of considerable progress in the Palestinian front. There is no, you know, reverse or no motivation for, you know, having a different position towards Israel.
Thank you. I work with the Armenian television, and my question is related to the Armenian resolution that was mentioned. Heading towards 2015, which is the 100-year anniversary of the genocide, and I was curious about your forecast, what's going to happen in this city within the next 2.5 years towards the 100-year anniversary. Should we expect any breakthrough in Armenian-Turkish relations, any roadmap? And also, the protocols which were actively mediated by the U.S. government and particularly by Secretary Clinton, right now they are still, I think, hanging in the air. It's not clear what's going to happen to these protocols. If Turkey is really interested in zero problems with its neighbors, why the Turkish government does not bring these protocols to agenda of its parliament, ratify them, and after that, within a couple of months, as the protocols forecasted, the relations would be better, the border gate will be open, and diplomatic relations will be established. So why they don't bring these protocols to agenda of their parliament? Thank you.
Well, looking at how the issue is does not affect the U.S.-Turkish relationship, it's quite clear that even President Obama, who promised to use the word genocide but did not do so, using the Armenian term instead, has adopted the formula that previous administrations have adopted, which is that that on this issue they would not they would try to find a way to keep the U.S.-Turkish relationship going, to deal with all the issues on their agenda, and without allowing it to undermine the relationship. Now, the normalization process encouraged by the U.S. By the U.S. government at the highest level, but by President Obama and even more specifically by Secretary Clinton, was designed to see the process culminate with normalization between Ankara and Yerevan, and hopefully find a way to deal with this issue, not least because the centenary, as you said, is coming up. I'm not optimistic. I mean, I would like to hear Bülent Arar on the Ankara perspective. I'm not optimistic about the normalization process. And from the point of view of Turkey, the U.S. Turkey certainly expects the U.S. not to allow the issue to undermine or forestall or even stop cooperation between the two countries on the range of issues. And we saw that in 2007 when the Bush administration said that it's very important to maintain the cooperation between the two countries because of the Turkish role in the resupply of the military contingent, U.S. military contingent in Iraq. So I would expect the U.S. government to work behind the scenes to try and prevent the issue from coming to a boil, and I would expect that this is the expectation of Ankara, is it not?
Well, for Turkish policymakers, it is, you know, very difficult to make a unilateral move to normalize the relations with Armenia. First of all, you know, from Turkish perspective, it will not be sustainable. You know, what is required is to first have Armenia to, you know, to kind of help to facilitate this process. If you put Nagorno-Karabakh as if you put it aside, there are 5-6 districts of, you know, Azerbaijan territory occupied by Armenia. And, you know, the reason of the closure of border was, you know, occupation of those territories. If Armenia seizes from those territories, makes some good gestures, there may be some developments. And again, you know, Turkish-Armenian rapprochement will be very much dependent on the rapprochement between Armenia and Azerbaijan. You know, the otherwise, the normalization will be, you know, will be a failure of a short period of time, and then we'll have the, you know, maybe a worse situation over there. Well, on this genocide issue, this is a carefully managed issue, and so far, you know, it has not been, you know, a serious issue between United States, but we have no guarantee that it may become a serious issue, since it's a very sensitive issue in Turkey, and you know, almost 95% of Turkish society, they are totally against this, you know, this Armenian allegations, and any kind of development will create, you know, huge disappointment in Turkey. It is, you know, and a matter of time to see what kind of developments will occur. But again, you know, I share Dr. Alirza's perspective. There isn't much reason to be optimistic in that regard.
Sure.
I mean, regarding the specific issue of the protocols, I mean, as you say, it takes two to tango. And it's an international agreement both sides have to ratify. It's not just Turkey not ratifying it. It is both sides that put it on hold. As far as I know, in the Turkish case, it's in the parliament, still waiting there. Sort of the process is frozen. In the case of Armenia, even the situation is even worse. The ratification process is halted, as far as I know. So both sides are not proceeding with the ratification.
We have time for a couple more questions, too. Yes, I'm sorry.
I'll just one moment. Be very brief. The Armenian party said that, the Armenian president said that, consider Armenia ratifies the protocols. It's, you can consider it already ratified by Armenia if Turkey does so. So we're expecting Turkey to do that, after which the protocols will be ratified. But my question was, you mentioned about the territories that are under Armenian control in Nagorno-Karabakh, but those territories were under Armenian control also the day when the protocol was signed by Turkey, 10 October of 2010. So why did Turkey sign this, knowing that those territories are still under Armenian control? Then what was the purpose of signing the protocols? Was this just a diplomatic maneuver, just to delay maybe some problems with Washington? Thanks.
Well, if you just reread some text on these international agreements, there is this ratification process, and the ratification processes are usually used for facilitating a kind of solution from the using the time from the agreement signed and ratified in the parliament or relevant bodies, and the expectation and implicit agreement was that the Armenia will withdraw from some of those territories. There was this expectation, and when it did not occur, it didn't move to anywhere. That was the expectation.
Am I the first?
My name is Frances Trix. I'm from the Wilson Center, and I would like the Balkans not to be forgotten. And my question is, what is Turkey doing in the Balkans? I'm especially concerned about the economics condition in places like Kosovo and the Muslim populations in Macedonia. I think the world has forgotten the Balkans, but I would like to know what Turkey's policy is there. And I'm very concerned about the political situation in Serbia.
Okay. Yeah, many assume that, Nuroz Kanar by the correspondent of Sabah Daily. Many assume that Obama's administration will not be take a front runner and interventionist position stand in the Middle East conflicts in the next 4 years. So, and by the way, however, there's an increasing chance to Syria issue will turn to another Kosovo and Bosnia, as you guys stated. Also, Palestinian issues out there. Under these circumstances, how do you foresee the U.S.-Turkey relations will maintain mutual understanding, despite the fact that the other conflicts still ongoing, especially in the Palestinian issue, besides the Syria issue?
Thank you. And this lady here had a question, or there was a gentleman there, perhaps?
Pete Apps from Reuters. I'm just wondering how... how Turkey would react, and what the U.S. would like, and what the U.S. would like Turkey to do in the event of Greece leaving the Eurozone and/or the EU.
Let me just take a crack at the middle one, and then about the Obama administration's non-interventionism, likely non-interventionism in the Middle East. We touched on this before in the early part of the session. There would be a degree of disappointment in Ankara, again, particularly with respect to Syria, and we'll have to wait and see if the Obama administration focuses much more on the domestic front, shifts its attention to the Asia Pacific region rather away from the Middle East, what that will do to the U.S.-Turkish relationship. But we don't know yet. We don't know how much more actively the Obama administration will approach the Syrian issue and will the Israeli-Palestinian issue. My expectation is that it will be it will focus on the domestic front for because of the economic situation, and what we just have to wait and see what that might mean for the relationship. But for the for this issue and also certainly for the Balkans, and what Turkey might do if Greece leaves the euro, I'll leave it to
Professor
my
Russ.
Colleague.
Yeah.
Well, on the Balkans, Turkey is very very much following a very much active policy in the Balkans. What Turkey has done so far is to develop bilateral relations. And even the Turkish-Serbian relations are at a very good level, which also created a psychological breakthrough in the region. Turkey, has good relations with almost all the Balkan countries, signs, these high-level strategic dialogue councils with those countries. Turkey also pursues, regional policy, just to energize the regional cooperation council and Southeast European cooperation process, and I like to energize those processes to facilitate political dialogue and economic interdependence. Turkey pursues, mediation attempts, and Turkey formed, bilateral dialogue mechanisms between Bosnia Herzegovina, Serbia, Turkey, and Bosnia Herzegovina, Croatia, and Turkey. There's also, help to have kind of improvement in Bosnian situation and shape the future Bosnia, which is in post-Dayton processes. Turkish businessman is over there, all over Europe, and Turkish development aid is also in the Balkans. I'll suggest you to read the Balkan session of this report, and I also wrote recently a short brief to GMF Turkey series. You made that download on GMF's website. Thank you.
Professor Russ, could you address, Secretary Clinton was just in the Balkans. How would you assess, or do you assess in the report, the U.S.-Turkish cooperation in the Balkans or cooperation with the EU, the Western Balkan policy? How do you assess that and the way forward? Is that?
Well, from Turkish perspective, the Balkans' future lies in the EU, and EU policy towards the Balkans is still valuable, and despite the Turkey faces problems in its own, EU membership process. Turkish-American, dialogue and cooperation is likely to continue in the region. But, if you look at the relative terms, the Balkans are much more important to Turkey than to the United States. But Turkish policies, those mediation attempts, infrastructure developments, infrastructural, infrastructure development activities, development aids, and all political and economic activities over there are welcome developments from U.S. perspective. The cooperation will likely to continue, and this is an area of perfect match of interest of these two countries, Turkey and the United States.
Greece is also Balkan.
Mr. Epps.
I was about to say, Greece is also a Balkan country. Can you also address Mr. Epps' question?
Yeah. Well, I have no idea what Turkey thinks about Greece leaving Euro. Yesterday we had this Turkish-Italian forum. This is a forum of intellectuals and the politicians, which met once a year, one in Rome and the next year in Istanbul. And there was this head of one of former Turkish businessmen association, and he thanked France and Germany for not, letting Turkey to enter into EU because of this Eurozone crisis. Of course, that was a joke. He supports Turkey joining the EU. Well, we are following the developments, what's happening over there. Turkish-Greece relations are, at the best level, considering the past, 40, 50 years. There is this enormous, development of economic relations and joint projects. Turkey tries to help. This is what I can say.
Did you want to give the benediction? Well, then. Thank you all very much for joining us today. I want to congratulate again the authors, Bülent Aras and Bülent Alireza, for their thoughts and on the future of the U.S.-Turkish relationship. Thanks again to our partners at the Center for Strategic Research for their good cooperation, to the Turkish Embassy, and we're delighted that General Scowcroft and all of you could join us today for this discussion. So please join me in giving a round of applause to our authors.